Section 21 can be regarded as a philosophical height in Song of Myself, where we see the ideals covered thus far, that is, the democratic imagination, the innate connection between the body and the soul, the superiority of nature, and the unity of existence, converge with Whitman's realist stylings to produce what can be viewed as a transcendentalist manifesto. By examining Whitman's Quaker upbringing, his evolution towards transcendentalism, and the interplay of these influences with literary realism, we can better understand how this section embodies his unique philosophy.
Section 21. I am the poet of the body, and I am the poet of the soul. The pleasures of heaven are with me, and the pains of hell are with me. The first I graft and increase upon myself, the latter I translate into a new tongue. I am the poet of the woman, the same as the man, and I say it is as great to be a woman as to be a man, and I say there is nothing greater than the mother of men. I chant the chant of dilation or pride. We have had ducking and deprecating about enough. I show that size is only development. Have you outstripped the rest? Are you the president? It is a trifle. They will more than arrive there, every one, and still pass on. I am he that walks with the tender and growing night. I call to the earth and sea, half held by the night. Press close, bare-bosomed night. Press close, magnetic, nourishing night. Night of south winds, night of the large few stars, still nodding night, mad, naked summer night. Smile, O voluptuous, cool-breathed earth, earth of the slumbering and liquid trees, earth of departed sunset, earth of the mountains, misty-topped, earth of the vitreous pour of the full moon, just tinged with blue, earth of shine and dark, mottling the tide of the river, earth of the limpid grey of clouds, brighter and clearer for my sake, far-swooping, elbowed earth, rich, apple-blossomed earth, smile, for your lover comes. Prodigal, you have given me love, therefore I to you give love. Oh, unspeakable, passionate love.
We've covered transcendentalism in section 17, but let's have a recap to get at the heart of this manifesto. Transcendentalism was a 19th century movement rooted in New England, championed by friend of the show Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau. It emphasized the essential unity of all creation, the innate goodness of humanity, and the supremacy of individual insight, that is your intuition, over institutional doctrine. Whitman, however, infused these tenets with elements of his Quaker upbringing and a literary realism grounded in physicality and experience. Raised in a Quaker household as the second of nine children, Whitman likely absorbed the values of simplicity, peace, integrity, community, equality, and stewardship. These tenets or values are often abbreviated as SPICES in Quaker ideology. Yet as he matured, he broke free from strict denominational boundaries, such that later on when he was asked if he was a Quaker, he replied no, adding, quote, "I was never meant to live inside a fence." In his transcendentalism, Whitman celebrates both the mystical unity of existence — I'll reference the episode on sharing atoms where this is explained in detail — as well as the tangible, sensuous reality of the world. Unlike Emerson, whose transcendentalism often veered towards intellectual abstraction, as we saw in the poem Brahma, right, the subject matter was about the highest entity in Hindu philosophy, Whitman, to the contrary, anchors his spirituality in the body and the earth, making his philosophy deeply inclusive and experiential, as we hear in his declarations of the poet he is. So let's examine those declarations. He says, "I am the poet of the body, and I am the poet of the soul." Whitman establishes himself as a unifying voice, bridging the physical and spiritual realms. The juxtaposition of the body and soul reflects the transcendental belief in the interconnectedness of all existence. His imagery evokes a sense of harmony, where the pleasures of heaven and the pains of hell are reconciled within him. He says, "The first, that is, the pleasures of heaven, I graft and increase upon myself. The latter, that is, the pains of hell, I translate into a new tongue." Right? The act of grafting, which in horticulture means to join two or more plants together by fusing their tissues so that they can grow as one, symbolizes growth through union, while translating pain into a new language suggests transformation, which is part of transcendentalism. He also declares, "I am the poet of the woman, the same as the man." Here we have Whitman's radical egalitarianism on display. By asserting that it is as great to be a woman as to be a man, he echoes the transcendentalist call for the inherent quality of all individuals. His reverence for the mother of men elevates the nurturing, creative aspects of humanity, which aligns with his democratic imagination. Whitman also says, "I chant the chant of dilation or pride." Let's zero in on that. The chant of dilation. This underscores expansion, right? To dilate. The expansion of identity, of understanding, of inclusivity. Whitman resists shrinking into narrowness. He advocates instead for growth and a pride in a collective humanity. We have, once again, the democratic imagination, a democratic spirit, which ties directly into this transcendentalist notion of self-expansion as a means to connect with the universal. Harking back to Whitman's transcendentalist approach, I mentioned his sensuous reality of the world, and a common thread in Whitman's work is the erotic and spiritual connection to the earth, and we see it vividly rendered in his address to the night and the earth. He says of the night, "Press close, bare-bosomed night. Press close, magnetic, nourishing night." Here we have the feminization of the night as bare-bosomed, magnetic, nourishing, nodding, mad, and naked. We get a sense of exhilaration when he speaks of the night. Similarly, he dotes on the earth. Smile, O voluptuous, cool-breathed earth. He admires her beauty, her slumbering and liquid trees. The earth of departed sun, her mountains misty-topped. Together we see the night and the earth are personified as nurturing and passionate, also magnetic and tempestuous, as seen in the description of the clouds and the tides of the river. This feminization, paired with masculine vigor, reflects a balance of opposites. His depiction of the earth as both a lover and a divine entity parallels with the poem Give All to Love by his colleague that we're bringing back, Emerson. They share a vision in their celebration of love as divine and boundless. I'll be reading an excerpt of Give All to Love by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Give all to love. Obey thy heart. Friends, kindred, days, estate, good fame, plans, credit, and the muse, nothing. Refuse. 'Tis a brave master. Let it have scope. Follow it utterly. Hope beyond hope. High and more high, it dives into noon, with wing unspent, untold intent. But it is a god. Knows its own path and outlets of the sky. It was never meant for the mean. It requireth courage stout, souls above doubt, valor unbending. It will reward, they shall return, more than they were, and ever ascending. So Emerson writes about love as a god. You might add, a god to be worshipped and venerated. He does not ask. He does not shy. He commands. Give all to love. Obey thy heart. But it is a god. Knows its own path. 'tis a divine master, let it have scope. Similarly, we have Whitman's ecstatic celebration of the earth as a lover, and he speaks on the love that awaits in the final lines. Both poets view love, whether for humanity, nature, or the divine, as an encompassing force that demands courage and surrender. While Emerson's tone is more steady and, one could say, didactic, Whitman's passion spills into a visceral and sensory appreciation of the earth and everything about it, right? He says in the final lines, "Smile, for your lover comes. Prodigal, you have given me love. Therefore I to you give love. Oh, unspeakable, passionate love." Continuing on the topic of Whitman's style of delivery, I mentioned earlier that transcendentalists often prioritize an air of intellectualism and abstraction in their work, whereas Whitman's work is infused with realism, which generally is characterized by realistic characters and settings, comprehensive details about everyday occurrences. There's often a plot, a plausible plot, you know, a story that could happen in your own town. Real dialects of the area. Character development is also quite important to realism. And there's an importance in depicting social class. Unlike other transcendentalists who often privilege the spiritual over the physical, Whitman embraces the tangible world and sees it as an equal to the intangible world. He believes that the body is the vessel through which the soul experiences the universe. His eroticism and sensuality underscore his belief in the unity of body and spirit, as seen in the lines that address the magnetic nourishing night and the voluptuous earth. For Whitman, transcendence is not achieved through abstraction alone, but through intimate engagement with the physical world. I think of the hundreds of affections springing from the earth in section 14, and how Whitman tries to relate to them. And so Whitman is basically the bridge between transcendentalism and realism. He grounds a sort of cosmic vision in everyday life and human experience, and I even think that section 21 and Song of Myself at Large is Whitman's praxis of transcendentalism, since, you know, we're speaking about it as a manifesto. So section 22 will be a continuation of this manifesto. He will be addressing the sea next, with the themes of spiritual unity, sensual appreciation, and democratic ideals under the banner of ecological spirituality. And there's an insightful paper by Donald P. St. John that I've linked that will detail what this term means and how it manifests in Whitman's work.